Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Frank Schaefer, who is a best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Ida Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and he previously worked with such figures as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. Frank Schaefer, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that would ultimately lead to his departure from the evangelical movement. Frank Schaefer's novels include Portofino and Saving Grandma, and his nonfiction books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, and his latest, Sex, Mom, and God. Welcome to Background Briefing, Frank Schaefer.
Hey, thanks, Ian.
And clearly, given that this fellow Breivik, in the mass murderer in Norway, in his manifesto cited a number of figures here in America, many of them associated with the phony controversy over the Ground Zero Mosque, Pamela Geller, and Daniel Pipes, the head of the United States Institute for Peace, Robert Spence of Jihad Watch. Actually, I think in the last interview I got him confused with some other fellow that has the gates of Vienna. Yeah. But the long and the short of it is some pretty creepy people are coming out of the woodwork. And I imagine being cited by a mass murderer is a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know, I think that the big issue here is less the individuals he cites, because, you know, he plagiarized a big chunk of Kaczynski's manifesto and changed a few words and made it his, and he talks about Christian Zionism and all the rest of it. I think the real story here is the overall context, the overarching similarity. Look, if you took his manifesto and you stripped out the loony bits about the Templar Knights and the Crusades and all the rest of it, and you just put his view of immigration or his view of homosexuality or his view of women's rights, or his view of Zionism and who should be on the West Bank and what should happen to the Palestinians, and you used it as a template and just laid it over the grid of what most Tea Partiers say they believe, or Michelle Bachmann says she believes, or the Republican Party stands for these days since it's been taken over by the religious right, I think the real story is the overarching context would be a match. Now, that doesn't mean in any way that I'm implying blame to either individual authors or politicians who would genuinely, from their heart, abhor what he did. But I am saying that the temper of the times we live in seems to me to indicate that the extreme action he took really comes out of a milieu which is a much bigger picture of xenophobia, homophobia, misogyny, Zionism run rampant, in terms of the Christian community, people like John Hagee and this big church in Houston, you know, calling essentially for the elimination of the Palestinians in the Holy Land, perhaps not literal elimination, but certainly pushing them out of the borders. That's the context. So, you know, when you look at the actions of a mass murderer, and if it's a Ted Bundy or a Hillside Strangler, whomever, that's one kind of thing. If you look at a senseless act of, you know, random car bombing by the Islamic jihadists, that's another kind of thing. This murder is something different. It's a very specific political act, deliberately fomented to try to generate race war. And it's something that has been well thought out and planned for years and has a manifesto attached to it. And its context is not in a vacuum. His views don't stand out like a sore thumb. His views would fit in with run-of-the-mill right-wing Christian views on almost every issue, both in America and Europe. So that's the shocker to me. It isn't that he quotes this or that person. The shocker is that the context of this killing is a political act which gives, you might say, in a horrible way, flesh and blood to what for so many people is just talk, but is drawn from the same vile cesspool of reaction and bigotry as what we would now call mainstream movements. And I hate to put it this way, mainstream to the point that these are the views of the Republican Party, not on killing, but on foreigners, on immigration, and all the rest of it. I think that's the shocker. The shocker is just this general context to me.
Well, Frank Schaefer, you don't have to go that far in the sense that ascribing the and I'm not criticizing your accuracy, but I'm just saying that that you don't even have to go that far with the Republican Party now captured by the Tea Party to see this extraordinary economic hostage crisis that they're pulling off in Washington, D.C., where they're risking the full faith and credit of the United States. They're prepared to bring the whole house down, having a political tantrum, trying to extort concessions so that they get 100% of their way. Well, that is, by any definition, extreme behavior.
Yeah, and what you see there is, you know, something that I was writing about on a piece that I did for Alternet this week, and was repeating again today with Martin Bashir on MSNBC, and that is that when you look at what's happening with the Republicans in Congress today, what you are looking at is faith-based politics. This is not about economics. It's not even about politics. It is about a religious conviction on the fact that, from their point of view, the U.S. government is illegitimate because it has not followed their moral teachings on everything from abortion to women's rights, to education, to gay rights. And the agenda of the Republican Party now, with people like Michelle Bachmann in the fore, or Rick Perry in Texas calling his prayer meeting on August 6th, is an agenda that, again, if you're looking for overlaps and a pair of spectacles to look at this through, the only pair of glasses that really works to understand what the Republicans are doing in Congress tonight is the Ayatollahs in Iran, and that is, it's a kind of a theocratic view of the world. So from their point of view, the U.S. government is evil because it no longer represents what they would call Judeo-Christian values at every turn. It has to be defunded, you know, starve the beast, as Ronald Reagan put it way back when. And their viewpoint is not one of trying to do what's good for the United States of America, much less the world economy, or to get very personal, you know, my pension and savings and yours. They are jihadists in their own way, and that is, it's a scorched earth policy. It's my way or the highway, and they will take us all with them. And when you add race into this, and too few people tell the honest truth on this, the heat and fire in the Tea Party and the Republicans today, from my point of view, over half of it doesn't even come from politics. It's just anger that they have at seeing a black man more intelligent than they are, more articulate and certainly more compassionate, sitting in the White House. This kind of entitled white man's club has been changed. When you add that mix in, you know, they are carrying out with religious fervor and conviction what Rush Limbaugh said before Obama even took office, and that is, I hope he fails. And they've done everything they can to destroy his presidency. And what amazes me about Obama is that he's managed to get anything done when he faces an opposition that has nothing to do with politics and everything to do with religious conviction about the direction of this country and trying to replace the Constitution and the Bill of Rights with what they would view as God's law on things like abortion, women's rights, gay rights, but even international policy, where they feel they can fight wars of choice based on lies, for instance, in Iraq, and they're entitled to do this because of their conviction about American exceptionalism. Somehow we're special. The rules don't apply to us. So touch it where you may, the Republican Party is in the hands of extremists. And even people like David Brooks, who's a conservative, middle-of-the-road Republican commentator for the New York Times as their commentator from the right, as they would see it, you know, he writes a few weeks ago that the Republican Party can no longer be considered a normal political party, that it has become something else. It's not even a political party anymore, and that's how far it's gone. If you can get David Brooks to essentially read you out of normal politics and call you something abnormal, you've really managed to do something here, and that's what the Tea Party has brought us to.
Again, I'm speaking with Frank Schaefer, the author of Sex, a Mom, and God. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and he previously worked for such figures as Pat Robinson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. He, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that would ultimately lead to his departure from the evangelical movement. Now, just in terms, though, of the specifics of the anti-Muslim stuff, going back to the Ground Zero Mosque phony controversy, which is about as phony as the debt crisis is, and as much as was ginned up for political reasons. And of course, Rupert Murdoch's New York Post fanned the flames. Those people, as we mentioned, have been cited by the Norwegian mass killer But there's one Republican candidate, by the way, who I think fits the bill in terms of this Islamophobia and these outrageous racist statements that are fanning the flames of interfaith tensions, and that is Herman Cain.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, he's not alone. Look, there's two kinds of Republican leadership today. Cain is one, Bachman is one, and then there are the other people who, you know, are quote-unquote mainstream. But listen, when you are, look, it's a degree of hostage-taking. The whole country has been taken hostage by the Republican Party. That's simply true. The Republican Party has been taken hostage by the religious right. And in the Republican Party, there's two kinds of Republicans, with a lot of gray ones, you know, undefined in the middle, but two on the extreme. One is, you know, the good old boys club that don't care at all about the social issues or even the Republican agenda. They're just in the pocket of the Koch brothers and et cetera, et cetera. Those guys, you know, would not let the Tea Partiers even caddy for them on their golf club if they ever actually met one in the flesh. But they have to play along because the primary-based election system in this country for politics means that they will be primaried on state level or national level and beaten by this vociferous group of people who have taken over the party. So what the Tea Party has done to the Republican Party is now doing to the whole country. And they're doing it on two levels. One, the true believers like Bachman and Cain, and then secondly, or Rick Perry, and then secondly, the people who are not true believers, and it's just business as usual, but they have to use these rubes, as they would think of the Tea Partiers, to get what they want in the primaries, and then they go on, and when they're elected, of course, they do nothing on any of their issues. What they do is they simply take care of their billionaires club and make sure that their friends aren't paying taxes. And those are that's what's left of the Republican Party. You know, Bill Buckley, roll over in your grave, or former John McCain, you know, look in the mirror and apologize. I mean, the Republican Party, agree or disagree, was not always in the hands of a combination of extremists, Ayn Rand groupies, and Bible-thumping fundamentalists on the one hand, and people who had no interest or agenda other than taking care of their billionaire stock traders. That's where it's come to.
Well, Frank Schaefer, I know that you're concerned, and you see an analogy here with the Norwegian mass murder in terms of similar currents here in the United States, in as much as the religious right and Christian fundamentalists here in the United States equate godliness with hatred of government. And
sure.
And that is, I think, a subject that's worth exploring. And furthermore, when you talk about abortion and the so-called pro-life movement, which it ends up being corrupted to the point where you have killers of abortion providers like the killer of Dr. Frank Tiller a couple of years back. And so the thing that I find particularly disturbing about that phenomenon is that it's ultimately about a moral free ride. It means that you can actually care passionately about, for example, about the life of a fetus, which, you know, pro-life is a much more powerful concept than pro-choice. It gets to the heart of a deep emotional and moral truth. So, but at the same time, the idea that because you care so much about unborn babies, that gives you the right to kill another human being, in this case, in his own church, is sort of, I think, I'm not trying to make a reach here, is kind of the mentality of this guy that went out and killed these kids because he thought that he had a higher calling that sanctioned the killing of these kids. So how do you go that extra step from being a legitimate pro-life activist and killing an abortion provider?
Well, I think you've outlined it very well, and it's not an accident that in my new book, Sex, Mom, and God, I take two chapters and really unpack both the history, the direction, and what's happened to the so-called pro-life movement. Look, it would not have started without my dad and I working on these things back in the 70s, not in terms of a Protestant pro-life movement, and then we teamed up with Dr. C. Everett Koop, who then became Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General, and so forth and so on. And so in this area, I was on the inside, and I think I know what I'm talking about, and try to explain how this became a watershed movement. But the thing that you said is absolutely true. Look, if you have a basic religious or moral conviction that you are completely right and everybody is completely wrong on an issue and there are no gray areas. And then you go the next step and you demonize your opponents so they are no longer rational people that you can disagree with, discuss with, perhaps learn from, who might even change your mind on something if they present an argument. They are just the other. They are demonic. They are wicked. You see, that's what's happened, and that transfer has been made to the whole U.S. government. The pro-life so-called community does not regard the U.S. government as legitimate. They regard it as illegitimate, or to put it in the words of my father, Francis Schaeffer, in his book, A Christian Manifesto, the U.S. government is the same as Hitler's Germany. And he said that because of his views of abortion. Well, as soon as you've said that, you know, if your president is like Hitler, if your government's like Hitler, what does that open the door to doing? You know, firebombing cities, Hiroshima, Nagasaki. I mean, where would the limit be to get rid of this evil if that's how you have delegitimized your own country, your own government? So when these people talk about being anti-government, you have to understand that in the context of a democracy, that means they are anti-American. That means they hate their country, and they do. They like a fictionalized America where there would be no gay people, no immigrants. Everyone would live the way they do. You know, they would be in home schools with their children or small Christian academies. There would be no public education. That's the America they love, and they try to create it on an individual basis. The rest of us, you know, to put it in Sarah Palin's words, are not real Americans, and she and her followers would be real Americans. So when you get to that point, when your opponent is no longer human, but someone who is illegitimate simply because they hold views you disagree with, and therefore, you know, they don't exist on the same level you do, you can kill them. And that's where abortion provider murders do their acts. That's why this guy drove his plane into an IRS building. He so hated the government. This is why the Houthi militia was training to kill policemen. I mean, think about that. The right wing is supposed to be all about, you know, cops and flags and you know, young Marines and the rest of it. The Houthi militia, in the name of Jesus, was training to kill American service people in order to hasten the apocalypse. And we've got secessionist movements running around the country in the woods, you know, training with automatic weapons. What for? Well, for Second Amendment remedies.
We've also got very likely that the governor of Texas, a secessionist, will be running for president. I'm afraid we've run out of time here, Frank Schaeffer, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's always my pleasure, Ian. Thanks a lot.
Again, I've been speaking with Frank Schaeffer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. Let's take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the author of Playing with Fire, Pakistan at War with Itself.